Next case is Metzler v. Metzler. You may approach. Good morning.
My name is Stephanie Weber Maloney, and I represent the appellant David Metzler. I'd like to reserve any remaining time for rebuttal. May it please the court. We're here today because the trial court committed error when it dismissed my client's divorce complaint. His spouse filed a motion to dismiss based on three distinct grounds, alleging lack of subject matter jurisdiction, lack of personal jurisdiction, and failure to state a claim upon which relief could be granted. When it dismissed the action, the trial court did not cite any of those three grounds as the basis for the dismissal. Rather, it first noted that the party's minor children had never resided in Nebraska and that there was a prior custody and support order that had been issued out of British Columbia. And it correctly found that it was without jurisdiction to make a determination on those issues. That part of the trial court's ruling was a correct statement of law as far as it went, because the UCCJEA, the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction and Enforcement Act, under that act, Nebraska did in fact lack jurisdiction over all of the issues relating to the party's minor children. We conceded that point in the trial court. However, with respect to the trial court's jurisdiction to dissolve the marriage, the trial court stated, and I quote, "The issues of custody and support are so integrated in the subject matter of the case that Nebraska is not the most convenient forum, nor the appropriate forum. The trial court appears to have used an inconvenient forum analysis as the basis for its dismissal. It appears not to have considered what's known as the divisibility doctrine. That doctrine holds that a court can possess jurisdiction as to certain issues, although it lacks jurisdiction as to other issues. Let's talk about its inconvenient forum analysis. There was no evidence offered in support of the motion to dismiss. That's a problem, and here's why. Because a trial court's order is required to be supported by evidence, and there was no evidence to show that Nebraska was in any way an inconvenient forum, even if that had been alleged as a basis for the motion. There's simply no evidence in the record to support the trial court's order. Let's talk about the three bases actually listed in the motion upon which dismissal was sought. First, let's talk about subject matter jurisdiction. That Mr. Metzler was domiciled in Nebraska when he filed for divorce is not challenged. He asserted it in his verified complaint. Mrs. Metzler offered no evidence to the contrary, and the point is conceded in the appellee's brief. The appellee suggests that a spouse who resides outside Nebraska must have minimal contacts with Nebraska in order for a Nebraska court to have jurisdiction to dissolve a marriage of a Nebraska domiciliary. That has never been and is not the law of this land. The United States Supreme Court has held that with respect to divorce actions, domicile is the foundation of jurisdiction. That's the Williams versus North Carolina case. In Williams 1 and Williams 2, that court held that domicile of one party to a divorce creates an adequate relationship with the state to justify its exercise of power over the marital relation. To quote that court, "Under our system of law, judicial power to grant a divorce, jurisdiction, strictly speaking, is founded upon domicile. The framers of the Constitution were familiar with this jurisdictional prerequisite, and since 1789, neither this court nor any other court in the English-speaking world has questioned it. Divorce, like marriage, is of concern not merely to the immediate parties. It affects personal rights of the deepest significance. It also touches basic interests of society. Since divorce, like marriage, creates a new status, every consideration of policy makes it desirable that the effect should be the same wherever the question arises."
Counsel, do you agree that, assume we buy in with your argument that the court had subject matter jurisdiction to dissolve the marriage, do you agree the court did not have jurisdiction, did not have minimum contacts with the appellee here to divide property, to consider alimony, to consider attorney fees, those other issues?
No, I believe the court had subject matter jurisdiction to do two things here, dissolve the marriage and divide the property. It did not have jurisdiction because she didn't obviously have any minimal contacts with Nebraska. Mm-hmm. It didn't have jurisdiction over other issues, but certainly it had the power to do those two things per statute.
What's the authority for dividing the property when there's no minimum contacts with one of the spouses.
The statute specifically says what the court has the power to do under
our
divorce statute.
It says it can award alimony and custody and support, but
yep.
we've agreed that can't happen.
Those have been supplanted by the UCC-JEA, whereas the division or the dissolution of the marriage and the division of property have not been supplanted by any other statutes. So we think that there was jurisdiction, subject matter jurisdiction.
Do you have case law that supports your position that the court could have divided property?
No, Your Honor, I do not. Simply a reading of the statute that authorizes, or it, that forms the basis of jurisdiction for a dissolution of marriage in Nebraska. And I think it's broad enough to encompass that, and until a similar statute such as a UCC-JEA is passed, that jurisdiction, taking jurisdiction away, that jurisdiction would still exist.
If the parties owned real estate in Pennsylvania, would it be possible for a Nebraska court to award that property? There's been no minimal contact, by the way?
Potentially not, Your Honor.
So there be exceptions to the division of the
there
property?
Are exceptions to this, and when you get right down to it and you look back at Williams versus North Carolina, a lot of this comes down to choice of law, or not choice of law, but conflicts of law applications to specific issues.
So if I understand your argument correctly, the only thing that would be preventing the Nebraska courts from at least dissolving the marriage would be if there was an action pending in Pennsylvania.
Correct.
And the evidence would establish what?
There was no evidence, so the evidence doesn't establish anything, really. The second ground asserted in the motion doesn't apply either. That was personal, lack of personal jurisdiction. I'm not sure that there was judicial notice taken of the return of service that appears in the transcript, so I would mention that this court has the power to take judicial notice under In Re Interest of Lily S. and Vincent S., 2017 Nebraska Supreme Court case, and I would ask that the court do so if that's not adequately presented in the Bill of Exceptions. Mrs. Metzler was served with summons and a copy of a complaint. She was served personally. The last ground that's set forth in the motion is failure to state a claim. Mr. Metzler was originally self-represented prior to hiring me. He used the divorce complaint that appears on the Judicial Branch website. That form contains each and every one of the allegations that's required by 42-353, such as name and address, date and place of the marriage, what issues are contested. So it would be our position that the trial court's decision to grant the motion to dismiss was error, that it must be reversed, and the case should be remanded for further proceedings. And if there are no questions, I thank you for your attention.
No questions at the moment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Members of the court, please the court, my name is Todd Engelman. I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Mary Metzler. It's my position that the Sarpy County District Court was correct in its order finding that that court did not have jurisdiction or was without jurisdiction to hear or determine the issues before it. And regardless of whether the Sarpy County District Court's order, this is a matter of law which you reserve right to resolve independently of the trial court. The appellant in this case relies heavily on the Williams versus North Carolina case, and I would simply propose to the court that our case is easily distinguishable from Williams. In Williams, the issue was not whether or not the court in Nevada had personal or subject matter jurisdiction to move forward with a divorce. The issue in Williams was whether or not a North Carolina court had to give full faith and credit to a decree issued in Nevada. There was never any issues, there's no facts in there as to whether or not the defendant spouses from North Carolina ever challenged subject matter jurisdiction or personal jurisdiction in Nevada. It was just, there was a decree in Nevada, the issue was whether or not North Carolina had to give full faith and credit to the Nevada decree. That's not the case here. My client's challenging subject matter and personal jurisdiction as to whether or not she can be hauled into Nebraska to answer a lawsuit in a state where she's never been to, never resided in, never been a marital residence, or anything. I would also point out the United States Supreme Court in 1978 in Kuchel versus California Superior Court found that the mere presence of one party in a state along with the children of the parties is not enough to obtain in-personal jurisdiction over the non-resident party. So I think even there the U.S. Supreme Court has said just the mere presence of someone in that state doesn't give that state personal jurisdiction over an absent spouse.
But doesn't that case go on to specifically refer to term in custody?
In Kukul? I believe so.
But I think there was. We're not talking about custody here, are we?
No, we're not talking about custody here.
Do you think the issue is just whether or not the marriage can be dissolved?
I think if it boils down to that, I think that is the issue. And my position with that argument would be, if you're just going to dissolve a marriage, it's not as simple as that. If you're looking to dissolve a marriage, there are due process rights to go along with that. If you dissolve a marriage, you are ending any spousal right to inherit. You're ending the potential of that spouse to be listed on their spouse's health insurance. In my case, it could very well impact my client's ability to remain in the United States. It could affect her legal status in the U.S. It could affect their children's legal status in the United States, as they were citizens of Canada. So merely going and dissolving the marriage doesn't just dissolve the marriage. It actually affects legitimate constitutional rights of my client. And to be able to do that in a state where she has never been a resident of, never has no minimum contacts whatsoever, would be a violation of her due process.
Does the Nebraska statute say that both parties have to be a resident of the state of Nebraska?
No, the statute merely regarding domicile just has one party has to be domiciled.
So if you have one party who has to be domiciled, why can't they proceed to file their petition to dissolve the marriage?
Because I believe in that, I think that statute just gives the court the standing to take a case. It doesn't merely waive my client's claim to challenge subject matter or personal jurisdiction. I think the appellant's argument is, we served her, thereby we have personal jurisdiction of her. I live here, thereby the court has subject matter jurisdiction. You look at his complaint. In his complaint, he lists there's no property to be divided. There's no assets to be divided. The children have never lived here. There's an order out of Canada involving the children. And he asks in his prayer for joint legal and physical custody of the children. So he's asking for things that this court simply cannot do.
Well, doesn't he also ask for a dissolution of the marriage?
But I would argue the dissolution of the marriage, though, carries significant burdens on my client. And if I think the issue is, if no one challenged it, I think the court could go forward. But my client is challenging whether the court has subject matter or personal jurisdiction to move forward with the dissolution. I think the courts in Stuckey regarding personal jurisdiction, the appellant has made the argument that simply serving her gives the court personal jurisdiction. The court in Stuckey, the Nebraska Supreme Court, states that it's basically twofold. Maybe personal jurisdiction may be acquired over a non-resident in a divorce by personal service if there are sufficient contacts between the defendant and the state relevant to the cause of action.
But that case involved judgment for support and alimony, so beyond just the dissolution of marriage.
That's correct.
And it divided property too, didn't it?
That's correct.
Does that make a difference?
I still think it comes back to the argument of, if you're allowed to dissolve a marriage, just the marriage, there are due process rights that go along with that. There are property rights that go along with the dissolution of the marriage inherent in the marriage itself. There are rights to inherit. There are rights to be covered on health insurance. There are the rights of my client to be in this country legally. Just dissolving
the
marriage.
But those aren't things that the court has authority to determine in a divorce action, in a no-fault divorce state, is it?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Well, you know, had your client appeared, not challenged mm-hmm. the jurisdiction, those considerations wouldn't prevent the court from dissolving the marriage.
I don't think it would have prevented them if she hadn't shown. And I think that's potentially the issue that was raised in Williams. There's nothing in the facts there that show either of the defendant's spouses from North Carolina ever challenged subject matter of personal jurisdiction in Nevada. So it was, in effect, a default divorce where the defendants never showed up. But to just go along and say that the marriage can be dissolved, that carries definite rights that affect my client.
But to follow up on Judge Moore's question, the fact that your client may be deported because of a dissolution doesn't affect the court's ability to still dissolve the marriage.
No, my argument is if the court dissolves the marriage, it's also determining property rights. It's inherent. And If you're dissolving a marriage, you are affecting property rights. You're affecting that person's right to inherit if the spouse predeceases. You're involving their right to be covered under their spouse's health insurance, to receive any kind of retirement benefits. Inherent in a dissolution action, dissolving the marriage affects property rights, no matter what. It just does. And that's my argument is, even if the court could find that it could go forward and dissolve the marriage, that would violate my client's due process rights because she has property interests in the marriage remaining intact.
Do you have authority for that argument about the other consequences of divorce?
I think it simply by, I think the court...
I mean, any case law that,
yeah.
that
no,
supports
no case
your
law
argument.
In that it's just inherent in the divorce action. When the parties are divorced, each party loses the rights acquired through a marriage.
Of course, then the court can make provisions for continued health insurance for a period of time and can make provisions for other things beyond just the division of property. But all we're looking at least our questions relate to just dissolving the marriage.
Yeah, I think it still only allows health insurance for up to 6 months. Mm-hmm. It still permanently removes her ability to inherit. It could potentially affect other rights that are just inherent in the fact of the marriage.
Which is true for any divorce action.
Correct.
So she has a choice of either litigating this matter in Nebraska or waiting and either she files or he files in Pennsylvania. Is that your position?
Correct. I think an appropriate jurisdiction to hear this would be Pennsylvania, where the children are at, where the spouse is at, and where the appellant can avail himself of the personal jurisdiction of Pennsylvania. But to try and bring a person who has never stepped foot in Nebraska, ever. The children have never been in Nebraska. He's never exercised any parental rights in Nebraska. He's never filed anything in Nebraska to have the Canadian order here.
About all those other things. And what we're talking about is dissolving the marriage, correct?
She could file in Pennsylvania. He could file in Pennsylvania, correct. I think to require her to travel halfway across the country to defend a dissolution action, it simply violates her rights to due process.
Do you have any authority for that?
I think just the cases that I have cited in...
Well, those cases involve other issues besides just solving them.
I would just submit it on that, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
We have no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. How much time is remaining for appellant?
The appellee's jurisdictional analysis just makes no sense. If you think about it like this, a couple marries in one location on the planet. Let's say they get married in Paris, and then they go their separate ways, and each one eventually ends up in a different state in the United States. Under the appellee's analysis, unless at some future point they both end up in the same state, neither of them can ever get divorced. Such a scenario would allow the absent spouse the right to forever evade being divorced simply by never ending up in the same state as his or her spouse. That would give too much respect to the rights of the absent spouse and not enough respect to the rights of the spouse, the other spouse, and his or her domiciliary state that has an interest in the marital relation.
But the party who wants the dissolution could go to the state where their spouse resides and file.
They could. And then if their spouse up and leaves that state, you'd have them forever chasing around the United States.
Once you made service, you wouldn't be doing that, would you?
No, you would not. But avoiding that happening was the precise reason that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the way it did in Williams versus North Carolina, because that was how it was previously in their opinion in Haddock versus Haddock. And they rejected that opinion in the Williams versus North Carolina decision. If you think about it in the context of the recent gay marriage case, Obergefell versus Hodges, there the United States Supreme Court held the 14th Amendment requires each state to recognize a marriage lawfully licensed and performed in another state. If each state is now required to recognize a marriage that occurred in a sister state, it's absurd to suggest that the state that is required to recognize a marriage is prohibited from dissolving the marriage just because the other spouse is not a domiciliary of Nebraska. The other factor here is the fact that Williams versus North Carolina is still good law. It's been the law of this land for 73 years, and it takes precedent. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you are excused and your case is submitted. Thank you very much.